ESPN 102.5, The Game, live from the Jack Daniels Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. Steve Lehman, News Channel 5, Braden Gall here. Kevin Kyle, of course, is engineering. Of course, we've got Julian Council producing back in the Game Nashville studios as well. And Steve, yesterday the Titans made a pretty big move. I don't know if you were under a rock or not, but Mike Mularkey's not the head coach. Mike Mularkey not the head coach anymore. And John Robinson had his press conference yesterday, and we'll let you hear the opening statement of that press conference here in just a minute. But to me, this, if you sort through and sift through all of the stuff that's happened over the last even 3 or 4 weeks, and it goes all the way back to your point about, you know, the fact that ownership and or the GM, John Robinson, became very quiet during a 3-game losing streak where the fans got very upset and concerned and nervous and unsettled. And the ownership didn't come out and really sort of say anything. Now, we always you hear the vote of confidence in college football from an athletic director, and you always, you know, think it's a sign of impending doom, frankly. But we can go back to that point and sort of start. At 8-4, everything was gravy. Everybody felt good, loved each other, and got along great. 3-game losing streak happens, and all of a sudden the fans get a little restless, and you're not hearing anything from ownership. Then you start hearing reports out from outside sources, Ian Rappaport, Jay Glazer, Adam Schefter, whatever, that are reporting that this Jacksonville game in Week 17 is going to decide Mike Mularkey's future, and we're all going, whoa, 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 wait a second. They could have come out and shut that down. Ownership could have. But Mike Mularkey wins. And so then you get into this whole week of we're excited about the NFL, we're excited about the playoffs, we're excited about Kansas City. They pull off this improbable comeback. Mike Mularkey has this very bizarre moment of honesty where he probably shouldn't have said what he said, but it was clearly honest. And I'm not going to fault the guy for being honest, but I don't think he should have said what he said. It's sort of airing dirty laundry a little bit there in public when you probably should keep that stuff private. And that forces a statement by the ownership group that's very vague and weird on Sunday. And then they have the Patriots game, and then there's a contract extension offered, and then the next morning he's fired. So this is really one of the most bizarre 4 or 5 weeks that I can remember in a pro football coach's tenure. That being said, to me, what all of this means is that John Robinson and Amy Adams Strunk think that there's another level that this franchise can get to, and that Mike Mularkey isn't the guy to take them there for whatever reason. It's not a knock on the job he's done, but what that is to me is a signal to the fans that their goals are the next level and that we're going for it. There's a lot of risk involved in that, but yesterday's movement to me was a signal to the fans that we are going for it. We're taking our shot. We're pushing our chips in. Use whatever cliche you want. That was what I took from yesterday as from a big picture standpoint.
And that their goals are the same ones the fans have, because ultimately the fans want to see a Super Bowl here in Nashville, and they want to see the Titans take that next step, and they don't feel like it happened this year. I do think it was the perfect storm in all this, is you had a coach that had been jilted before in his coaching stops, and so he's sort of predisposed to feeling like teams don't always have your back and there's zero loyalty in this business. And you go through that stretch where you're struggling at the end of the season, the most important time, and I don't think the team had any plans to make a move at that point. I think they wanted to wait and get all the information in and make a rational decision at the end of it. But as you're doing that, the fans are in an uproar. They're not showing up to critical games over at Nissan Stadium. You've got to take notice of that if you're an owner or if you're a general manager, and the excitement level around the team that was trying to get in the playoffs for the first time in 9 years. Then you do, and you go win, but then Mularkey maybe feels like trust has been lost there, at least on his side, because of everything he's been through. And you're right, he makes that statement. And so you just get to this point where it seemed like the relationship was almost beyond repair. And I think that's what we found in the last couple of days, where they clearly weren't on the same page. But the other thing I found out with that, and I think we already knew this, but it was reaffirmed yesterday, is as much as Amy Adams Strunk liked Mike Mularkey personally, thought he was a good coach, thought he was the right fit initially.
Wasn't even in the room when they let him go.
This is John Robinson's team.
Yep.
He was the one who ultimately delivered the news. He was the one who stood up there alone yesterday in the press conference to talk about what happened and where they go from here. This is his team. This is his hire. And this will be the direction he wants to go.
And his career will be defined by who he hires in this situation.
Oh, no question.
Here's my question for you, just thinking out loud here. Because the relationships were so good, because Mike Mularkey previously, and because Mike Mularkey was so well respected in the locker room, if he had not sort of had two, if he had time to sit back and think through all this stuff and maybe not been emotional about it, because I think the Kansas City answer in the post-game press conference was clearly an emotional response. And again, I'm not even faulting him for having those emotions. What I'm saying is if you had lied in the must lie situation where you just say we're focused on New England, or hey, I'm proud of this guys, not said a word about
ownership. I'm not even thinking about the coaching situation.
Yeah, just do the coach speak answer to that question and not gotten emotional with that response. And then yet on Sunday in this week after beating New England, not gotten emotional about and sort of dug in, right? It felt like he mishandled. That was the most Butch Jones press conference I've seen out of Mike Mularkey. Was like sort of just, I'm going to be stubborn, and this is the way it is, and this is what I'm doing, and this is it, and leave me alone. This is my decision. If those things had not happened, and he had just answered them with coach speak the whole time, and they had this week as an organization to kind of have meetings and reevaluate, just say, I'm reevaluating everything. Just say that. All Sunday, you could have just said, we're going to reevaluate everything. Just give me the coach speak answer in both of those situations. If he had not said those things publicly, do you think there could have been a moment where the three of them come together and cooler heads prevail or a more rational outcome takes place? And maybe if they gave it four or five days of meeting, that Mike Mularkey maybe comes to a different decision and says, you know what, I'm on board, I'm going to be the head coach, but I'm going to evolve and change my offensive philosophy. And any Adam Strunk goes, doesn't have this weird press conference from Kansas, because the press conference at Kansas City is what started this whole, to me, that's what started this. When Mike Mularkey publicly airs dirty laundry about what's going on behind closed doors, to me is the break. That was the tipping point. So does this change if they had all this?
I kind of agree with you, but what started is when the rumors started to circulate, there was silence from the organization.
I mean, that's what led to him saying that.
It still doesn't
mean you're supposed to say it, though.
Sure, I do think there's a possibility that had there been a little more time, and this is why – ultimately, for the longest time, I thought he was going to be back, is I thought these conversations about, okay, let's sit back, let's evaluate. Generally, what happens is the coaches sit down and they spend a week or two looking at everything and come up with ideas. I sort of thought they might give him the chance to self-evaluate and say, all right, this didn't work. This is what I want to do. And I think if you get through that in a couple weeks, maybe cooler heads do prevail. Which tells me maybe John Robinson wanted to do this for a long time, and so he forced the issue. The bottom line is, you may be right that Mike Mularkey stepped back and thought of in the rational sense of, what's my best play here to give me my best option? He may have been able to save himself. The problem is, I don't think he believes that. The problem is, I think Mike Mularkey truly believes that his offensive philosophy is capable of putting up 35 points a game like it did last year during a stretch, is the same style of offense that we see from three of the final four teams in the NFL playoffs right now, with a good defense physical offense.
That's not the norm, is to have three teams like we've got right now in the final four.
No, it's not. But he believes that that's the style that can win at this level, and that's what this locker room's built on. And, again, I think he would tell you that the biggest problem on this year's team was the injuries offensively, particularly to the quarterback that everybody's worried about. Yeah. And he should be credited for gutting it out. But you've got to take that into consideration. Well, and maybe even, you know, to further Mularkey's point, I'm not necessarily trying to make it here, but from their standpoint, I think they would say, look, it's kind of a remarkable job that we won 9 games considering all the problems we had this year. And then, oh, by the way, we went in and won a playoff game.
Yep.
So I think that's what he would tell you, is they deserved a chance to come back with a healthy roster and make a few small tweaks to a grand scheme that was fine. I think John Robinson and a lot of fans believe the grand scheme needs to be overhauled on the offensive side of the ball, and that's the problem.
And so I just feel like had there been an opportunity to not – had it not played out all in public, in the court of public opinion, and with the fans being such an influence, and with Mularkey's press conferences being such an influence, I do think if there was given a 5 to 10 day window of self-evaluation – that could the three of them come to a different conclusion, I think it would have been very different. I don't know if Mularkey's still the head coach, but I do feel like that would have given to the people out there like yourself and me who both think that Mularkey deserves a lot of credit for what he's accomplished over the last 2 years. I think there would have been – I think the conversations would be very different. The relationships would be different. The feelings would be different. If Mike had just – and again, everybody's guilty in this. Ownership should have said something to quiet the rumors. Mularkey shouldn't have said what he said in the press conference. Mularkey then shouldn't have said on Sunday what he said in the press conference to basically say he basically gave them no choice at that point. When he said, no, I'm not going to – like in a press conference, when somebody asks you, hey, are you going to make any staff changes, and you just flat out say no, you really haven't given yourself any options at that point. Well, like you've put yourself in a corner at that point.
Yeah, he hadn't even done the self-evaluation himself at that point. He's already saying, I'm not willing to make a change.
So, and again, that doesn't mean that Mularkey is the answer to win championships here. I just think it would have been interesting. What would things have been different? How would they have been different had all this played out a week and a half later? I just think it would have been interesting.
It could have changed. I don't think it should have, though, given where they were. I think they were on far enough opposite ends of the spectrum.
Let me hear your explanation of that, and then we'll hear John Robinson's opening statement yesterday in the press conference when we come back right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Steve Lehman, Braden Gall here, and Steve, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Steve, I want you to explain a little bit further, because we were just talking about, hey, had this not been as emotional maybe as it had gotten for clearly Mike Mularkey. I'm not sure if John Robinson got too emotional in this process, but there was a personal relationship there. And when personal relationships are involved, there's always emotion. And had cooler heads prevailed and they had not had all the public sort of interaction that took place at press conferences, then maybe they sat back and did a week and a half of self-evaluation, that maybe they come to a different conclusion. Mike Mularkey decides, you know what, I will adjust my offense. Ownership does say to Mike, hey, our bad, we could have handled this in a better situation, a better way, that they end up with Mike Mularkey and a new offensive coordinator. The question is that the best thing for the Tennessee Titans, and you feel very strongly that it isn't?
I say no. I think a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about this, I basically said your scenario there, that cooler heads would prevail, was what was going to happen, and what was best is that they'd get a few weeks removed from the season as they discussed the future, and Mike Mularkey deserved the right to be a part of those conversations. They would all come to the understanding, his self-evaluation, their belief for the future, that the right move for the team was to make a couple offensive staff changes, maybe a little bit of a scheme change, but for Mike Mularkey to remain. What I think we saw in the way this played out is there were some personal feelings there and issues that I'm not sure that would be the best thing, because I don't believe Mike Mularkey ultimately thinks that's the best direction for the team. I truly believe John Robinson does. I think they're that far apart from each other. So I don't know if you want the rational side of things of Mike Mularkey getting to a point where 2 weeks from now he says, you know what, I'm an NFL head coach, there aren't that many jobs of these, who knows if I'll get another opportunity, I need to acquiesce and agree here and say goodbye to my buddy Terry Rubisky and make a couple moves, because I need, for self-preservation purposes, and I agree with this hesitantly. You either want a guy who believes fully, we need to make this change and I'm all in, or you don't. And I don't think Mike Mularkey was all in. And if that's the case, I think the point they reached yesterday was the right one, that it was time to mutually part ways or fire Mike Mularkey.
You know,
and move on.
You got to your destination, but you might have taken like a car wreck to get there, even though what should have happened is you sort of like meandered and drove your car normally and parked in the normal spot and got to your I agree. And you've mentioned the 35-point stretch there for that offense a couple of different times throughout the show. They still only averaged 23 points a game last year, and they averaged 20 points a game this year. And neither one of those numbers are going to get you to the Super Bowl.
Nope.
Neither one of those numbers are going to get you to the championship. And I mentioned yesterday and over again that the 10 offensive stats, basically every offensive metric you can come up with to measure an offense in the NFL, got worse from year one to year two. And there's a lot of different reasons. We've gone over them ad nauseum. But even still, even when they were good, they still weren't elite. They still weren't high-level numbers, except for the rushing offense, which was third in the league last year. That's a high-level number. They still were third downs last year, third in the NFL last year. That was a high-level number.
Red zone was best in the league.
Red zone was best in the league. So there are a couple of numbers that look at it and you go, okay, maybe there is a sign of life for the system. But it's really just not the way the game is going. It's to step back from it and look at a big-picture philosophical view of the NFL, the game, every single rule that has been implemented over the last 15 years has been to help receivers and quarterbacks. I mean, every single rule that's put into place.
Yep.
When's the last rule that was put into place to help a defensive player? Like, seriously, like, it's not. When's the last time a rule was put into place to help, like, the interior running game? Like, it's not. It's about quarterbacks. It's about passing the football. It's about entertainment. It's about points. This is the way the game is going from a rules standpoint. So while Mike Mularkey, who is an old school guy, I agree with you that you want a coach who's 100% committed to the system, right? Like, you don't want an 80% committed coach and expect to go win because he's not sure he believes in what he's doing, which is what would have happened had Mike Mularkey stuck around and changed coaches. I'm with you. I think that eventually the Mike Mularkey product and system and philosophy just isn't the next level. It's not going to get the Titans to the next level. It never was. I think it was great for what they needed it to be, which was get them back to being competitive, rally the locker room, you know, get this team back to winning football games and competing at a higher level. And he's done all of that, and he deserves a lot of credit for that. But is it the answer to the next phase, the next step, the next rung on the ladder? And the answer is just no. I'm with you on that. Yeah. So I think ultimately for Titans fans, there's risk involved in all of this, but ultimately I think the right thing for Titans fans and for the future of Mariota and the offense, it's the right thing.
I think there's a lot of people who believe he was a bridge coach, a coach to take you from the depths of the NFL to being competitive and to being a playoff contender type of thing. But now you're talking about, okay, we are a playoff team. How do you get to the next level? And that's the question for John Robinson, is who is the guy to do that? Because it's very difficult to hire a head coach in the NFL. More times than not, they don't pan out. And you're in the advantageous position as your team's already pretty good at this point, so you should be able to attract somebody good. The question, though, Braden, is how do you get that guy? Who is he? Does he have head coaching experience? Does
right.
he not?
Right.
And how do you get that next level? Because as we said earlier, it's a very small window you're hitting. It would be very possible to hire a guy and go backwards from the job Mike Mularkey has done this
The
point.
Percentages will indicate that that's actually what's going
to
happen.
Right. The ability to hire someone who can come in and make an impact either immediate or long-term that takes you from that 9-10 win range where you're competing for a division title and getting into the playoffs to a division champion and home field advantage
yep.
and winning multiple games in the playoffs and competing for a Super Bowl, that's a very, very small window to hit.
Connor Orr going to join us from the Monday Morning Quarterback, and we'll talk just about how good of a job is this when you look at – when you compare it to Detroit and New York and Indianapolis and Arizona, how good of a job is it? But this was John Robinson yesterday. We'll hear from John, the GM of the Tennessee Titans. This was his opening statement as he releases Mike Mularkey, the head coach, yesterday from St. Thomas Sportsplex.
After numerous conversations with Amy, we have decided to part ways with Mike Mularkey as our head coach. I'd like to thank him for all he's done for this team, this community, and wish him the best moving forward. We will begin the search immediately for a new head coach. Our goal remains the same. We are committed to our fans, to bring a championship home to this great city and state. These decisions are never easy, yet Amy and I remain steadfast. And the most important thing is the team. Putting our players in position to maximize their ability in all three phases of the game. I'm very proud of the success we have had over the last two seasons and look forward to working with our new head coach and moving us closer to and ultimately winning a championship. We'll begin the search immediately and update you through our PR team, Robbie and his staff, upon completion of each candidate that we interview.
There you have it, John Robinson. They will begin the search immediately. We already have a couple of candidates, but the question is, how good of a job really is this Tennessee Titans head coaching job? There's a lot of jobs open right now. How good is this one? Connor Orr from the Monday Morning Quarterback had a very interesting take yesterday on his website. He wrote a great column about it. We'll get his thoughts on that, and we'll dive into how good of a job is this when we come back. Steve Lehman, Braden Gall, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Steve Lehman, Braden Gall here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and Mike Mularkey no longer the head football coach for the Tennessee Titans, which means, of course, there's a job opening, and John Robinson has to go out and find a head football coach. The headline from our latest guest, Titans open head coach position is frightening for the Giants and the Cardinals. Now, I know a lot of writers don't write their headlines. Connor Orr joining us here from the Monday Morning Quarterback. Did you write the headline, Connor?
I did not, no, and that was written really before we knew that. We had an idea that the Giants are closing in on Pat Shurmur, obviously, but did not know that it was that close. So, Yeah, so ignore the Giants part of that.
Well, but yeah. I still think the question is still a valid question because, in theory, none of these jobs are technically filled yet. I know Patricia's earmarked for Detroit and McDaniels is earmarked for Indianapolis and the Cardinals and all this stuff. The question is how good of a job really is the Tennessee Titans as a franchise right now? What is it about this job that makes you so convinced that it's one of the best jobs available?
Well, you just look at what else is out there. And, you know, I guess maybe if you're a defensive head coach, maybe the Cardinals job is a little bit more attractive because, you know, there's more pieces there for you to work with and it accentuates your skill set a little bit better. But, you know, if I'm any head coach, I know I have about a 2-year window to prove that I'm worth staying around. And, you know, the Titans have, you know, a young star franchise quarterback. They have a great setup there with John Robinson. And I just think that would make me more comfortable than, say, going to the Giants, where I know that I have to handle Odell Beckham's contract situation. I have to figure out whether I'm going to bench Eli Manning or trade him, and I have the number 2 pick in the draft, and I'm going to have to pick a successor for Eli Manning. So I think there's some murky situations there where the Titans, you're set up to win 9 or 10 games next year.
Connor, as you look at the Titans situation, and specifically with John Robinson, he's still a relatively young, you know, just in the second year himself as a general manager. But what's the feeling around the league about the job he's done, and why is he, I guess maybe in your piece, such a benefit to the job, given what they've done the last couple of years?
I think it's a good personality. I mean, you saw really, I mean, when he didn't have to, he showed some faith in Mularkey last year when, you know, a lot of people wanted him gone and, you know, brought him back and brought the team to the playoffs. But obviously they didn't maximize their potential, and he knows when to cut bait. But, you know, what you really want out of someone in that position is someone to listen to you. And he picked players that fit Mike Mularkey's system, I thought, really well. And he traded for players that fit Mike Mularkey's system really well. And as a head coach coming in, that's really attractive when you say, hey, you know, I'm going to run a power running game. I'm going to need another big running back. I'm going to need, you know, I'm going to need a game-breaking wide receiver. And even though it took, you know, Corey Davis all year to finally break out, you know, I think that's at least provides some hope for the future. So, you know, a guy that can cooperate with you, a guy that can work well with you, and a guy that shows that the players that he does pick to fit your system actually end up playing pretty well.
Connor Orr joining us here from the Monday Morning Quarterback and you know, how all of this offense works together. But, you know, if you had to describe and maybe pinpoint names that do this, what would you call the modern NFL offensive scheme? I mean, we're all in love with Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan. How would you describe those schemes, and what names maybe are the names that kind of fit that mold to be the next guys in that line?
Well, I mean, you heard Matt LaFleur's name kind of floated around, and I think that it's a super interesting. I mean, you know, if you know what I wrote in the column too was that if the Titans were going to cut bait with Mularkey, they would have had to have a pretty darn good idea of who they were going to go after, because it's late in the process. A lot of the big names are already spoken for, and you saw that Matt LaFleur was one of the first names that kind of came out when they were looking at interviews. And you know, worked under Kyle Shanahan, worked under Sean McVay. I think that's definitely a great hybrid in terms of, you know, a guy who knows how to put together a scheme that's quarterback friendly. I think that would be exciting for Titans fans. But even if they go defense, a lot of these younger guys, you know, the guys that are in their early to mid 30s, have experience integrating college offenses into their system and have experience. Really, and this is kind of a crass term, but just dumbing it down for their quarterbacks. I mean, Sean McVay is making life so much easier for Jared Goff, and these younger guys understand that that's how to sort of build a foundation for your offense and push it forward.
Connor, one of the questions I have for the new coach who comes in is how he's going to navigate the AFC South, which all of a sudden has a Jaguars team that's been a doormat forever in the AFC Championship game. You've got Houston coming back next year, presumably with a healthy Deshaun Watson. The Colts at some point figured to have a healthy Andrew Luck back. The division appears to be getting tougher. How much of a concern is that for anybody looking at this job, and where do you think the Titans fit in roster-wise right now compared to those other teams?
It's a really interesting question. I mean, you know, Andrew Luck presumably coming back healthy and maybe pairing with Josh McDaniels, which I think is pretty interesting for the Colts. But, yeah, you know, I think it's one of those things. I mean, you know, if you're an NFL head coach, there's only 32 of these jobs, and you just kind of have to take it and roll with the punches. A lot of people thought Sean McVay was crazy at 31 to take a job in a division with the Seahawks and with the Cardinals, you know, poised to bounce back and, you know, just a very good sort of set of teams around him. But then he ended up making it work, and I think that's what you have to do. Roster-wise, you know, I was impressed, I think, more than I thought I would be with the Titans defense this year. I thought they did a nice job of sort of finding some complimentary free agents. That's obviously a building process, though. I mean, that's something that they're really going to have to work on and sort of reimagine some of the things that they're doing. But if they can get that defense fixed, and I think just getting Mariota healthy, and I think that they're just as good, if not better, than a lot of the teams in their division.
Connor Orr joining us here. Do you believe that, the four teams we've seen make the Final Four, that three of them sort of being built around defense? And, again, I know Case Keenum was significantly better this year than we anticipated, but, listen, that wasn't necessarily the plan for the Vikings going into the season. Is it a sign of anything? Is it a trend, or is it really just a one-off and it's random and it's still Tom Brady and it's a quarterback-driven league?
I still think it's a quarterback-driven league, but, you know, I think that every couple of years it's cyclical, right? And you just see some great defenses catch up with the offenses, and you saw a lot during over the course of this year. I mean, there were six games when the Chiefs were unbeatable this season. They had the hardest offense in the league to figure out, and then once everybody kind of started hitting their bye week, you saw them struggle a little bit. Teams started picking out the plays pre-snap and all that stuff. And you saw that, too, even with the Rams towards the end of the season with the Falcons, that great game they played against them in Los Angeles, where once you get some time on all these new offenses, things start to change. And that's why, really, the last great offense left in the playoffs right now is the Patriots, who essentially change their offense every 4 weeks, you know, and they completely shape-shift as a team every month. And so I think it's one of those things where, you know, it's kind of an anomaly season, but at the same time, the great offense with the great quarterbacks will continue to dominate.
To piggyback off of that question, as the Titans move forward, right now, obviously, they're built to be a run-first, smash-mouth offense, and then Mariota makes some plays in the passing game. Clearly, they're going to an offensive change here by bringing in a new coach, moving away from Mike Mularkey. But do you see a wholesale change where this offense looks completely different and is more focused specifically around Mariota in the passing game? Or is it just kind of a small tweak with someone who maybe implements the running game and the play action stuff differently than what we saw with Mike Mularkey and Terry Robiskie?
I think it can be a small tweak that yields big changes. You know, I mean, you look at what the Eagles did with Carson Wentz, and that they had a power run, you know, personnel, and they kept doubling down on that. You know, even though they had Carson Wentz and Alshon Jeffrey and, you know, all these guys, you know, what they ended up doing was, you know, getting Jay Ajayi. They got LeGarrette Blount, you know, and they wanted to pound the ball no matter what, because that's still a quarterback's best friend, is clock control and kind of easy to pick up first downs. You cut your first down distance in half, but, you know, every time you snap the ball in first and 10. And so I think that that's any team's game plan at this point, and I don't think it needs to get that much more complicated. As long as they can just find a way to get Mariota just a little bit more vertical, and I think that'll open up a lot of possibilities for them.
Connor, always a pleasure, man. Great read. Anytime you say positive things about Nashville, you can come back on the show, my friend.
Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Connor Orr there, Monday morning quarterback, and Yeah, he obviously said a lot of positive things about Nashville in general, too, not just the franchise, but being in Nashville. And
That's true.
We obviously are very partial here as native Nashvillians. So,
yeah, but the current coaching staff loved that, too. I mean, Dick LeBeau wanted to come here because his wife wanted to live in the Nashville area. Mike Mularkey enjoyed being in the Nashville area. That's a selling point.
There seems to be a big debate, though, about this team. How good of a roster really is this roster? There seems to be a big debate about that. That seems to be pretty divisive. Let's get into that when we come back. Steve Lehman, Braden Gall, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back. Live from the Jack Daniels Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. Predators back on the ice tonight, 7 o'clock against the Vegas Golden Knights. His name is Steve Lehman. My name is Braden Gall. And, of course, Julian Council producing back in the Game Nashville studios presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Julian. I also want to remind everybody, obviously, to come out tonight before the Preds game. The Honky Tonk Hat Trick is brought to you by Bud Light, and it is back. You can join me today from 5 to 6:30 at Tootsie's prior to the Predators showdown with Vegas. While you're there, you can register for a pair of tickets to tonight's game and passes to the Bud Light Zone, all you can eat, all you can drink. Or you could also register to win a VIP hockey experience, which, of course, includes a pair of tickets to an upcoming game, dinner for two before the game, and a ride of the Zamboni during intermission. That's right. Be sure to stop by Tootsie's, Rippies, and Honky Tonk Central before every Predators weekday home game for specials on Bud Light and for opportunities to win those tickets. Come by tonight. I'll be at Tootsie's from 5 to 6:30 up there on the top floor, so come by and hang out. Got some news on Victor Arvidsson and Philip Forsberg yesterday as well, so we'll get to that in a little bit. But the question I have, and we were debating this like in true like video game millennial style during the commercial break as we're like arguing about what the Madden ratings would be for all these players on the Titans, that there seems to be a pretty big divide. Everybody, you know, sort of agrees the offense needs to take another step and sort of agrees that Mariota regressed a little bit, but it's also is injured. And like there's a lot of things everybody seems to agree on from an expert standpoint, like talking heads and media members and fans. But one thing I can't seem to find an agreement on is just how good this team really is from a talent standpoint. How good is this roster? And depending on who you ask, you hear some people say this roster is in a great position to be taken to the next level, and they've got the certain pieces that are in place. You know, we heard Ian Rappaport talk about it earlier in the show. We played that cut from yesterday's interview on 3D where he says they've got a lot of weapons on offense and they've got the quarterback in place and the offensive line's great and blah, blah, you know, all this stuff. And then you have other people who go, well, they sort of overachieved to get to 9 wins last year in a big way. And then they stepped back, sort of regressed to the mean a little bit this year. And then we're really lucky to beat Kansas City. And we're not really sure if the talent level's all that great. There seems to be a pretty big divide on this. Where do you fall, Steve?
I don't think the roster is very good right now, but I
relative to what? Qualify that a little bit.
Just within the league. I think it's a pretty average league roster, but I also sort of see all the questions you asked or statements. I see a little bit of all of them in there. There are certain pieces. Like, I like Mariota. I think he can be an elite-type quarterback in this league, so you feel good building around him. You have two tackles that I think are elite-type tackles in the NFL, assuming Jack Conklin comes back healthy from the torn ACL. That's a great place to build around there.
So far, I'm with you.
You've got a all-pro type tight end in Delanie Walker. I think you've got a really good player in Jarrell Casey to anchor your front. You've got some decent pass rushers on the outside. Could be better, but some decent pass rushers on the outside. But, I think you have a great safety in Kevin Byard.
Delanie Walker, 33 years old. Jarrell Casey, 27 years old.
Yeah. So I think you have some foundational pieces there that allow you to do the things you want to do as a franchise. But I think there's also some real holes. The wide receivers still aren't very good. I'm not sure, depending on where you think DeMarco Murray is at this point of his career. I'm not totally sold on Derrick Henry. I'm not sure what you think about your running game in that sense. I think there's some real problems in the interior of the offensive line. You've got some questions about depth and things at linebacker, certainly questions in the secondary as well against the passing game. So there are some other holes. I think a couple things. 2 years ago, they had the worst roster in the league, and I'm very comfortable in saying that. They were awful. And so they've taken huge strides in that, and they've shored up a lot of these things. John Robinson deserves a huge amount of credit for that. But I also think a couple things happened is there were so many holes that 2 years ago he spent time shoring up the interior, both lines. He said, we want to be physical there. We want to not just get dominated and beaten off the field like we have been. And he did. He did a good job there, and he put him in that position. Then last year, what were the questions we were all asking? It was perimeter guys. So he tried to do things at wide receiver. He tried to do things at cornerback. We'll see, frankly, how those moves panned out. I don't think it changed them a whole lot this year. But that's what he attacked to prevent them from being huge weaknesses. But in the meantime, the interior of that offensive line wasn't as good as what we thought. They probably needed to make a move or two there last year to make that better. They didn't. And so they regressed in those areas. And so I think when people who say the offensive line is so good, why did they regress? It's because the interior of that offensive line isn't actually very good. Josh Klein and Quentin Spain aren't that good of NFL players. And you put them around Ben Jones, it makes him a worse NFL player. And so you have two really good tackles, but the interior of the offensive line needs work.
I think Ben Jones is fine at center for the next few years, 28, 29 years old. I think he's fine, but I agree both guard spots need to be addressed. The good thing, and this is where I think we fall. If you had to give me a number, 1 to 32, where this roster ranks from a talent perspective, it certainly is not top eight, which is where they finished in the season as far as where they were in the playoffs. They finished top eight. I think Kansas City's got a more talented roster. I think, you know, there's a lot of teams I would list that have a more talented roster than the Titans. I'd probably put them in the middle somewhere. If you told me 15th, 16th, 17th in terms of talent, I think that's about right. The critical thing for me, though, is what you pointed out first. Where are the true building block pieces? And they're in all the right spots. It's two tackles. It's a quarterback. Yeah. And it's a nose tackle. Those are incredibly difficult commodities to find. Now, if Adoree Jackson's a building block piece, then you found another commodity, because corner is an extremely difficult commodity to acquire. So I think when you tell me that you've got the quarterback, the two tackles, the nose guard, and the corner, and a safety that you can build around, then I feel like that's what gives people like sort of promise and hope. But I agree, there's major upgrades that need to happen in the secondary. There needs to be major upgrades at defensive in the front seven, whether you want to call that depth at linebacker, overall talent at linebacker, or outside pass rush. They're getting a little older on the outside there. I never really have believed Derek Morgan is an elite-level player at his position. He's a good player. I agree with the interior of the offensive line. We're not still sure about the wide receiving core.
Maybe you got a building block there the other night from what Corey Davis did. Finally healthy, making an impact.
And Taywan Taylor looks talented. He just needs to put it together.
He also looks lost.
Exactly. He needs to put it together somehow. So, and I think if you were to say, listen, you can have DeMarco Murray or Derrick Henry – and we'll give you our running backs, I don't think you make that trade with too many teams. There's a handful of teams you might trade your running back core for with somebody else, meaning you feel pretty good about your running back core. The questions about DeMarco Murray's age and injuries and Derrick Henry, I think that's all fair stuff. But if you told me I get those two guys back, I'm taking that over a lot of other teams.
That's certainly not the first area I'm starting.
So to me, I think they're probably the 15th, 16th, 17th best roster in the NFL. But what's important to me if I'm a coach is that the most prominent pieces of that roster are in the most critical positions, which are quarterback, tackle, nose tackle, corner, and safety. And those, to me, are why you can look at this and see positive thoughts on the roster. Because I agree, the overall talent is not necessarily there yet.
I'd probably go a little higher than you. I think they may have been a top 12, so a playoff-type team with the roster. They're not a top eight roster there. There's a big jump there, and so I think they deserve credit for getting themselves into that position.
Like the Texans, to me, have a better roster,
top
to bottom.
But here's the difference. I was going to use the Jaguars as an example. I think the Jaguars have a better roster than the Titans, top to bottom. Here's what they do not have. They do not have a quarterback I feel better about than Marcus Mariota. And I like the Titans' tackles better. You're right, the foundational pieces. And so if you're a coach looking at this job, I think you look at it and say, one, what great strides they've made in the area of building the roster in the 2 years under John Robinson. Has he missed on a couple things? Sure. But here's the bottom line.
Like Kevin Dodd would have answered that question I have about outside pass rusher.
Yeah, you would have hoped.
Huge, huge question.
But, you know, 2 years ago, this was the worst roster in the league, and it had been for a little bit of time. And now we're debating, what are they, top 12, top 13, top 14? I mean, you just passed half the league in 2 years. So John Robinson deserves credit for that. And then you have the foundational pieces like the tackles, like the quarterback, like a couple running backs that you believe in,
right?
Maybe more than I do. You've got some pieces on the secondary side. There's some things there that you can certainly build around. Those are the types of things that you'd be really excited about if you're a coach. And, oh, by the way, John Robinson's not done. So he worked on the areas of weakness now. Now I'm not sure if you pointed anything that's like, oh, man, that's a true weakness. We can't even go out there and compete. But now you go back and say, okay, right, the interior of the offensive line wasn't as good as we thought. We've got to address that now. Or, secondary is still not there. Let's do a little bit more. You do those types of things now, and that's how you take a roster from middle of the pack roster to top 10 roster, top 5 roster, things like that.
And Joe Rexroad going to join us from the Tennessean coming up in just a few minutes to break all of this down. And the bottom line is one of those positions we haven't talked about is a guy who's probably a – Logan Ryan, a Derek Morgan, a Ben Jones, very good quality, serviceable, but not elite, was the head coach. And that is sort of where John Robinson might have viewed one of those moves to make, and that's why we're now in the middle of a coaching search. Joe Rexroad going to join us when we come back right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.